Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Protect, Sustain, Grow, best practices for handling your church's money. Whether it's your first time dealing with church finances or you've been handling them for years, this video toolkit will help you provide financial integrity and sustainability for your church, plus expand your church's income. Learn more and watch an introductory video at churchleadership.com/shop. Can tithes and offerings continue to fund a ministry that propels your church toward a vital future? In this episode, Mark DeMoss asserts that churches need to create multiple streams of income by leveraging the value of their people, money, and buildings to bless the community and advance the gospel.
Hi, I'm Ann Michael. I'm the Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership here at Wesley Theological Seminary, and I'm editor of Leading Ideas e-newsletter, and I am pleased today to be the host for this episode of Leading Ideas Talks. I'm talking today with Mark DeMoss, founding pastor of Mosaic Church in Central Arkansas, a thriving multi-ethnic congregation. I know Mark from his past work in the area of multi-ethnic ministry, but his most recent book is on church finance, and it's provocatively titled The Coming Revolution in Church Economics, and that's the subject for our conversation today. So welcome, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, you bet, Anne. Great to be with you.
Yeah, so can you begin by explaining to our listeners what you mean by a coming revolution in church economics? Because those are strong words.
Yeah, the title, The Coming Revolution in Church Economics, is really a reflection of the need that pastors and local churches have to get away from relying simply on tithes and offerings to fund the work in the future and moving away to a model whereby they create multiple streams of income. The church essentially is an economic system, if you think about it. Put a business hat on for a moment. Churches provide a number of goods and services to people, right? Like we provide good worship or children's programs. We preach the word. We baptize. We bury someone when they pass. We will show up at the hospital, organize meals for you when you give birth. And if you think about it as a business model, which I know it's not a business, but there is a business element, a church is providing goods and services to people. And the way that that's paid for is traditionally through tithes and offerings, at least in our lifetime, tithes and offerings. But the problem is, and what's going to happen in the future, is due to stagnant and declining budgets and attendance, due to the fact that millennials, people born after 1964, do not see money or think about money, and particularly giving, the way people born before 1964 think about it. Due to demographic shifts that are happening around us, increasing diversity in our country, and given wealth gaps, the increasing burden on the middle class. Today, middle class wealth is at the lowest it's been since 1947. There's a variety of factors, including the potential for counties taxing your property as they do in Pennsylvania, and or the government taking away the tax-exempt status for local churches. There are so many factors, Anne, that are already in play and or that loom in the future that we as pastors, ministry leaders, have to recognize the need for a disruptive shift in our approach to funding the church. And again, simply put, that's creating multiple streams of income, or to say it another way, how do we as pastors and ministry leaders learn to leverage the assets of a church, which is people, money, and buildings, to bless the community, advance the common good and the gospel, all the things we want to do, we are doing, but at the same time, by leveraging those assets, get some measure of return, if you will, on investment, create sustainable income, leveraging assets to bless the community, but at the same time, generating some measure of sustainable or profitable income. And in the future, it won't just be tithes and offerings, but it will be other methods of monetization of existing services and or profitable business venture and enterprise, a combination of things that will fund the church in the future.
Yeah, so for a number of years, I mean, we pay a lot of attention to church finances in our work, and I'm pretty widely read on the subject of church finances. And I mean, we've been paying attention to trends such as churches becoming more strategic in leveraging their property, whether that's through rentals or community partnerships or sometimes through real estate redevelopment. We see a lot of churches living in different relation to their physical location. Maybe they're going to rent or borrow space rather than own, an increase in bivocational pastors. I mean, that's something we're paying a lot of attention to. But some of the things in your book were ideas that went well beyond this, and they were things that honestly I'd never seen people propose before, like monetizing certain services that the church provides. So you've got a chapter in your book where you talk about, instead of giving coffee away, maybe we should have a coffee shop and sell breakfast to people, or the church starting church-owned businesses, or having other businesses within your building, or even developing property for the purpose of business rentals, or having staff members raise money to support their own salaries, or contracting out their services. I mean, these were ideas that to me were very, very novel, I'm really intrigued that you're sort of pushing the envelope that far.
Well, you know, it is true. And it's what we've had to do as an urban church plant, a multi-ethnic, economically diverse church plant in the urban center of Little Rock for now almost 19 years. Early on, we recognized a few things, that the more people that joined our church, for instance, it cost us money. And when you're attracting diverse people, when you're attracting the urban poor, the model of the church, getting back to what I said earlier, the traditional model is tithes and offerings, but let's break that down a little bit further. The traditional way we do this and fund a church is essentially attracting people to come to the church. In other words, the more people that come, the more revenue we receive. And this has led to church growth and church growth principles, and how do you break the 200 and the 500 and the 1,000 barrier? And of course, we want to see souls saved and the gospel extended and fulfill the Great Commission. I get that. On the other hand, it's also a funding model, right? So The more people we can get, the more money we get. That is changing. That is changing so fast and right now, due again to demographic shifts, due to the fact that, as we talked about, the way millennials and people born after 1964 see and give money different than those born before 1964. For all these different reasons, that model of, if I can say it, butts in the seat, the fact that that's going to change because attendance is going down and for these reasons. Right. So what's happening right now is most pastors in America, in my opinion, when it comes to the finance and economics of their church, all they're doing is managing decline. They are not at all leading into the future. They're simply managing decline. And like the frog in the kettle, they don't even realize it, because all we have in the toolbox, if you will, is how do we get more people to come to our church?
Right. And when I mean, I think what you're saying is one of the reasons why so many church plants fail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also why so many churches that are on the decline curve are put in a very difficult situation, where if they can't pay the pastor's salary and afford their building, they can't be a church. I mean, given the way we think about it.
Exactly. And the strategy, again, all we have in the moment is how do we get more people to come? Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not thinking it's only mercenary, but you know, yes, for the gospel. But on the business side, how do we get more people to come? Well, here's the problem with that. The problem is, again, for some of the reasons I've already articulated, if somebody, for instance, is 65 years old and they attend your church, and that person dies, they move to a different state, in one way or another, their giving goes away. Yeah. How many millennials will it take to replace that giving?
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody's done a study on this, but off the top of my head, every time I talk about it, people say maybe 10. So let's just say it takes 10 millennials to replace that person's 65-year-old giving. And then you think about it, what's the customer acquisition cost? See, what do I have to spend as a church to attract a millennial versus what I have to spend, if you will, to attract someone who's 65? You talk to a person who's 65, you say, come, we teach the Bible. right? We're exegetically sound. We teach the Bible. We love and care on people. They go, hey, that's good enough for me. They show up. But if you say that to a millennial, they'll say, what else do you do? What about your social justice side? What about your compassionate work? And all of those things cost. How about your children's program? And now I got to buy a laser light show and smoke machines. I got to wow everybody. And that costs the church money. So right now we're like hamsters on a wheel. We're chasing more people, more butts in the seat, if you will. But with that chase comes the expenditure of more money to attract them, and you'll never catch up. So the idea in what we're proposing and what we do here and what many others are beginning to do or some already doing is disrupting the economic system. So yes, tithes and offerings, but we're going to have to also learn how to attract local, state, and federal grants. And on top of that, how do we actually create or generate profitable, sustainable income through business enterprise? And that, again, becomes like a multi-tiered strategy for funding the church.
We'll return to our episode after this brief message from Wesley Theological Seminary.
Online summer courses from Wesley are available for academic and CEU credit. Courses include Healthy Stewardship in the Local Church, Church Finances, Ministry and Self-Care, Bonhoeffer in a Post-Truth World, Solution-Based Pastoral Care, Howard Thurman, Mystic, Prophetic Theologian, and many more. Registration is now open. Some classes start May 26th. See the full list of online summer and fall courses and register at wesleyseminary.edu/wesleyonline2020. At Wesley, we pray that you keep safe, keep learning, and keep leading.
I don't know if you're familiar with research that was published just within the last couple of months from the Lake Institute. They came out with this national study of economic practices of congregations. And what that research found was that 81% of the revenue that comes into to congregations is from contributions, and another 13% is from what I would call pretty traditional sources like fundraisers and endowments, and then about 6% is coming from rental. But you know, some of these other more innovative funding strategies, they're just not even on the radar screen yet in terms of, and I pressed the author of the study, David King, in talking with him. I asked him about this because we're paying attention to some of these trends, and I was expecting to see some evidence in the research that churches are beginning to adopt some of these more innovative practices. And I raise this point not to dispute your point, but just to say that I think you're pointing to a future that is, for a lot of congregations, way outside of their current practice, and maybe a lot of churches are still a really far way away from this. And so I guess the question is, this really requires a different mindset, and it also requires a different set of competencies. And so how do you think that congregations and denominations and even theological seminaries can begin to help people think in a different way about church finances?
Yeah, well, and you're absolutely right, Ann. This is a disruptive model at a time that the economic system of the church has to be disrupted if it is going to be sustainable. Of course the church is going to be around. It's just how many. And are they merely surviving or are they, in fact, thriving in the future? So we are talking disruption. And change, of course, is never easy. In business, the number one, challenge is the pain point for people is switching, right? So switching from the way what I like and what I'm used to something new. And that's why we call this and believe it to be a coming revolution in church economics. If you're a pastor listening to this, you don't have to understand business and this could sound very overwhelming. You might have said, hey, I just signed up to preach the gospel and to care for, the sick, right, and to love and serve and disciple. Here's what I say to you. You don't have to be the person that delivers on these fronts, but you have to understand, like the men of Issachar in the Bible says, the men of Issachar understood the times and knew what was right to do. We have to be like those people who understand this moment and what is coming and know what is right to do. We have to create a team of teams in our church. And if you think about it like a stool, think about a three-legged stool. We need a spiritual a team, a social team, and a financial team. And how that works is the spiritual team is your church, all the things you do, evangelism, discipleship, baptizing, small groups, children's ministry. That's the game of the spiritual church. And it's led by a senior pastor, and it's primarily funded by tithes and offerings. But then the second leg is your social justice and compassionate work. You create a separate nonprofit that's led by an executive director in order to solicit local, state, federal grants, donations from other churches, human resources from other places, and you move your justice and compassionate work out from under the budget of the church on the spiritual side into the social justice side, because you can't get local, state, and federal grants as a church for a program. But if you put it under a nonprofit, you qualify and you can get it. And so this is a smart funding strategy to advance local just or social justice and compassionate work in the local community, but not funded by tithes and offerings. You'll get way more money than tithes and offerings could ever afford you to advance those goals. And then the last leg is the financial leg, which that leg would, the head coach, if you will, of that would be a CEO or a CEO type, who who's going to help you rent that facility or develop property, help you monetize existing services, help you start new businesses, in fact, start brand new businesses, and then generate an ROI or a profitable, sustainable income stream on the third leg. So tithes and offerings on the church, local, state, and federal grants, donations on the social leg, and for-profit ROI on the third leg. You combine all that, and each team functions as a separate unit, and it's overseen, of course, by your leadership structure or what have you in the church. But all that's to say is the combination of those three teams, if you will, playing effectively is what is not only going to move the church from mere survival to stability, but ultimately to sustainability and effectiveness in the future.
Well, and I think too, as I was reading your book, and other people who are working in the same way that you are, I mean, there's also a missional piece to it. I mean, this isn't just about economic survival. I mean, this is about presenting your church in a different way to the community that has missional implications as well as financial implications. And so, in a lot of the examples that you talk about, you're really making your church more present to the community, whether it's through partnerships or, you know, retail space or the way that you're using your building. And that is not something that's separate and apart from the mission of the church. That's a strategic way of expanding your missional presence as well.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you bringing that up. This isn't about us sitting back and getting rich, fat, and happy, pursuing economics in the way we're suggesting, in a sense, to be mercenary, right? This is about advancing a credible gospel in an increasingly diverse, painfully polarized, and cynical society, and being able to sustain our work long-term. If we keep giving everything away for free, we're not going to be here in 10 years. And so it is about the mission. I believe that just economics, I don't mean just economics, I mean justice, if you will, just economics is the most effective strategy for evangelism we have currently available to us and to use in the 21st century. In the 20th century, it was explanation. How did people come to Christ? It was explanation. You bring Billy Graham to your city, he clearly communicates the gospel, people get saved. In the 21st century, explanation doesn't cut it. It's demonstration. Mm-hmm. We have to demonstrate redemption. We have to demonstrate the hope of the gospel. And this is exactly why, and I appreciate you bringing up the point, why we're talking about this. Matthew 5:16, he didn't say, let them hear your good words. He said, let them see your good works. Right. So rather than buy land and build buildings, when you repurpose an abandoned Walmart or a Kmart or Toys R Us, you don't have to preach redemption. You just redeemed property and everyone in the community sees it. It leads to job creation, a reduction in crime around the facility. It leads to new taxes being generated for your local community and many other social goods. And that's what people pay attention to. And that's what's going to attract those who are disenfranchised disenfranchised, cynical about the church when we are creating jobs and lowering crime and repurposing abandoned property and generating tax revenue. That is what gets the attention of the world and gives us the entree then to explain, as it were, a credible gospel rooted in our good works that they see and ultimately come to recognize the God in us, the Christ, and it becomes a compelling witness. This is a matter not merely, as you pointed out, of survival or sustainability on the economic side, as well as an evangelistic strategy. This is a matter of stewardship. Mm-hmm. Because in the American church, basically stewardship is defined as three things. It's defined, for instance, as, hey, we own this building. You know, God gave us this building, and we've got to take care of it. So we mow the grass. You got a hole in the wall, we fix it. There's a pothole in the parking lot, we fix it. Another thing is good stewardship is we have to report, accurately account for the money we receive. And thirdly, we have to clearly communicate to donors what we received and where that money is going, how it's being spent. Those three things essentially define for the American church or the establishment what is good stewardship. But biblically speaking, although I agree with all three of those and we practice all three of those things for the reasons I said, biblically speaking, exegetically speaking, that's not what defines good stewardship. It's the story, where the stewards, right?
Right.
And to the master, he gives them five, two, and one.
Yep.
And one guy says, you gave me five. Here's your five. I made you five. Here's your two. I made you two. One guy sat on his asset. And that person who sat on his asset and buried it is called the wicked, lazy slave. The American church right now is literally sitting on billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions, some say, of undeveloped assets buried in the ground, lazy, wicked slave. For instance, a church of 65 people with a $2.5 million endowment in the bank, but nobody's getting saved. The community's not being impacted. But by golly, those 65 people are proud of the fact they have $2.5 million in the bank.
Yep.
It's a church that owns 40 acres of land that's just sitting there undeveloped. And on I could go. It's buildings all over this country that are used on Sunday mornings, but at no other time during the week. That equates to the burying of assets. And that, by definition of Christ himself in the story, is wicked and lazy.
Yeah.
Good stewardship is taking mm-hmm. what I have and doubling it, if you will. It's leveraging it to generate even more and more possibilities with it. That is good stewardship. And to the person that says, hey, what are you talking about? The church should just preach the gospel and trust God to provide, right? Well, what do you say to that? Well, I say, if someone says that to me, I say, well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been to a doctor? Have you ever signed to buy a loan to buy a house or a car that you couldn't otherwise afford? Have you ever taken prescription medicine that a doctor signs? I can say, well, where's your faith? Like, why don't you just sit around? Do you get up every day and go to a job and collect the paycheck and work hard to get raises? Where's your faith? Why don't you just sit around your house, read the Bible and pray all day and then go check your mailbox for money? Right?
Right.
Okay. So it's about good stewardship and exercising intentional faith. So this is really rooted, as we talk about in the second chapter of the book. There's a theological mandate that we have to shift our brains, not only for the economics, not only for the just witness, but to be in fact faithful and good stewards. All of this is at the root of what we're suggesting in the coming revolution in church economics.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the theological question. I agree very much with your interpretation of stewardship as involving, you know, not just, you know, maintenance, but the responsibility to use something fruitfully for God's purposes. I guess a couple of other theological thoughts that came to my mind were, I mean, one is, I think so much of the church is thinking out of a scarcity mentality when they're just kind of counting the beans and hoping they can pay their bills and worrying about how they can keep downsizing things instead of really claiming abundance and the ability to think differently about what possibilities and assets and resources exist for our church is a form of abundance thinking and really claiming what God has provided for us in new ways. But I think there's something a little bit that's concerning to me on the theological side of this. And one is, I mean, you're explicit in saying that the church still needs to encourage tithes and offerings, but I think the church has a mission to cultivate giving and generosity in people. That's not just about paying its bills. It's about forming people for generosity because God needs us to be generous people. And I worry that if the church gets more concerned about making money in the marketplace and less concerned about cultivating generosity, that we could avoid that calling that we have to help people learn the importance of giving.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, and I certainly, we say yes, tithes and offerings, yes, generosity for all the reasons you said, but also yes to what we're talking about in church economics. So yes, it's not a displacement of what is for the reasons you say. It's adding an additional layer to how we're thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that on the could people take what we write and what we're doing, what we're promoting, and in a sense run with it, and all of a sudden they become a big business machine, blah blah blah. Yeah, they could do that. People could do that. But here's the thing: they're already doing that. There's people already.
Right.
Like our book isn't gonna. Like people have been leveraging the Bible and God and the church for their own, you know, human means or whatever. We didn't start that. That's already happening. But the fact that that is happening and or a potential danger shouldn't stop the rest of us who would build accountability, who aren't doing this by ourselves and creating teams around us and all the other reasons you'd have accountability built in order to chase this dream of just economics, future, not just stability, but sustainability of our work for the long term. So you're absolutely right that there is a danger. But again, by the way we construct the models, by the accountability we build into the system, if you will, then we can keep that mission, if you will, just economics, evangelism, a credible witness, and at the forefront.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do a good job in the book of explaining why, you know, money isn't inherently problematic, and the church doesn't need to be afraid of dealing in the economic realm. At the same time, I do think that the church is always at risk, whether it's operating in the old paradigm of just tithes and offerings or whether it's operating in this new paradigm of bringing only a transactional mindset to money. And so I think this isn't just a risk if churches start getting more entrepreneurial. I think everyone in the church needs to see whatever forms of economic sustainability and whatever forms of financing, that they don't only look at it through a transactional lens.
Absolutely.
I think you have given us an awful lot to think about in terms of what the future is going to hold. And the one thing we know is it's going to involve a lot of change. So I want to thank you for helping us to think in new ways about these very provocative and important subjects. Thank you for your tremendous ministry, and thanks for being with us today.
Well, you bet, Ann. Thanks so much for having me. And if I could just give one other word, if you as a pastor or ministry leader in a church are interested in not only understanding what we're talking about, because of course you could read the book, listen to this podcast, and get some idea, but if you're actually interested in us holding you by the hand and walking you through to actually transition your church to doing this, go to churcheconomics.org, churcheconomics.org, and you can read all about and even sign up for a brand new, it's a 5-month Church Economics Accelerator. It's a program that we have partnered with Ocean in Cincinnati. It's a high-tech accelerator company, but we literally take you by the hand, and for 5 months, we will walk you through a strategy. Essentially, the Economics Accelerator is a mini MBA for pastors. And so you can find out about that at churcheconomics.org.
Okay, well, thanks so much for sharing that resource, and good luck with that program. And thanks again for being with us, Mark.
You bet, and thank you so much.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, we speak with Orlando Evans, online pastor at Impact Church in Atlanta, on best practices for building an online worshiping community. thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.